Greetings, listeners and friends of RAOTC. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying welcome to this broadcast for July 2018.
And hello, listeners, from me.
You know by now that this broadcast is carried on a range of frequencies each first Monday morning of the month, except for January. However, please don't forget the repeat transmissions at night at 10.30 hours UTC, on 80 metres on Melbourne and Tasmania, and via a telecast. These details can all be found on our webpage, www.raotc.org.au. And we again thank all of our volunteers who relay this program at the various times.
Club News. We begin our club news this month with a comment by Bruce, VK3UV, who attended the recent WIA convention on the Gold Coast. Now, it is not our policy on these broadcasts to talk about the doings of other organisations, the WIA included, so I stress that these are Bruce's own comments on that meeting.
Report on WIA directors and club office bearers held at the Gold Coast Amateur Radio Club clubrooms on the 18th of May 2018. I attended the above meeting with two hats. One by representing RAOTC as Vice President and the other as Treasurer of Fanpark, the Frankston and Mornington Peninsula Amateur Radio Club. There were approximately 45 club delegates and 4 WIA directors in attendance. After the usual social greetings, the business discussed focused on several areas. Firstly, the WIA office is grossly understaffed, but finances do not allow for any more paid employees. Therefore, a ticketing system has been introduced, and callers are issued with a number which in turn is given to a director or another volunteer to answer officially. It is hoped all inquiries will be dealt with within 2 days from the initial inquiry. The finances themselves are approximately $500,000 per annum, and after wages, amateur radio printing and other expenses, nothing is left over. This issue was also raised at the AGM itself. One item that has not been given much coverage is that the WIA is sending 2 delegates to the 2019 ITU conference, which is being held in Cairo. This will cost over $40,000, and this amount is kept in the WIA reserves for that specific purpose. A couple of delegates expressed surprise at the complexity of it all and the cost factor involved. The WIA does not have an official treasurer. That is intentional. At the moment, the WIA employs a bookkeeper 1 day a week to handle the major items and keep the MYOB figures up to date. It is a very complex issue. There was a broad discussion on Amateur Radio magazine, and it was agreed that the new arrangement with printing only 6 issues per year was generally acceptable. The WIA assessor website needs upgrading and be made easier for assessors. A WIA marketing group has been established. This was brought up by a VK2 delegate and received general acceptance. They are looking for persons with some expertise in marketing. The renewal of the ACMA agreement for the management of amateur exams and the issuing of licence came in for a lot of discussions. There is a lot involved and we learned that the current situation is under-costed. Since the AGM, the ACMA has released the information for tenders for the renewal of the current agreement and the handling of amateur exams and issuing of licences. One of the main criteria of the tender process is that applicants need to be a registered training organisation, an RTO, or if not an RTO now, to apply for registration as an RTO within 6 months of being appointment.
Thank you, Bruce. Speaking of feedback, last month I appealed to you for comments on two main issues: whether the HF relays should continue and some help with various positions at RAOTC. The fact that we had a few members state their replies to the HF relay situation was good. All were in favour of continuing the relays. But this means that there needs to be more of you available to help with the relays, as the present incumbents would like a break and don't want to be tied up to the broadcast every first Monday. This is understandable. So it's up to you, members, whether the committee decides to continue this service or not. The other factor is whether the broadcasts themselves will even continue. The present compiler will be stepping down at the next AGM in September, so there is a possibility that the October broadcast could be the last. Again, it is up to you. If no one comes forward to compile this monthly broadcast, then it passes into the annals of RAOTC history. I repeat here that positions available are: 1, a broadcast officer; 2, QSO party manager; and 3, OTN audio recorder. Please get in touch with either Bruce or me via the club email if you can help. New and deceased members. In this section this month, we welcome David Swallow,
VK3KA3WH.
Previous call signs were VK3XYE and VK3JHQ. David became full member number 1747 on the 13th of June. Welcome to you, David, and please enjoy your time with us. Your support is greatly appreciated. It is with sadness that we advise the passing of several of our members this month. Bruce Thomas, VK2AMT, member number 1415. Sadly, no date was given for this event. Also, Brian Proudlock, VK7BP, member number 644, became an SK during December 2017. Our membership secretary, Bill Roper, VK3BR, has been belatedly advised that Bill Coates, VK5WCC, member number 1199, became a silent key during March 2018. That Joe Gelston, member number 1101, died on the 29th of May 2018. And finally, Bill Hall, VK2XT, member number 812, became a silent key on the 20th of June 2018 at the grand old age of 105 years. Bill was first licensed in 1930, so he was in his 88th year as a licensed amateur. Imagine the changes he had seen in that time. Let us pause a moment in memory of our departed colleagues. Thank you.
This is VK3OTM, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia Incorporated. This month we bring you the voice of Peter Wolfenden, VK3RV, the current WIA historian and a strong supporter of RAOTC. Peter will tell us about the WIA efforts to preserve AR history in sound archives and introduce some other people who contributed much to the development of amateur radio.
A sound archive, preserving our oral history. Over the years, the WIA has collected many sound recordings, some of which were used for the weekly Sunday news broadcasts. Others were interviews of early experimenters which were simply passed on to the Institute. During 1984, Max Hull, VK3ZS, a president of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, a past president of the WIA, and, at the time, the WIA historian, worked with others to produce a compilation cassette tape for the 75th anniversary of the WIA in 1985. This was named The Sounds of Amateur Radio, Volume 1. The next major step in preserving our sound history was taken in 2008, when a further compilation was prepared for the 100th anniversary of the WIA, scheduled for 2010. This time, the selected segments were assembled as a CD, The Sounds of Amateur Radio, Volume 2. But perhaps more importantly, at that time, it was decided to preserve in a digital format as many of the old tape recordings as possible, some of which were starting to mechanically fail or become noisy. This is an ongoing project which also involves documenting the subject matter discussed on the original recordings. At a later date, further details of this project could be discussed, but today we are going to play you some short segments from a number of amateurs involved with opening up of the shortwave bands during the mid-1920s. In our first segment, which was recorded in the 1960s, Max Howden, VK3BQ, talks about how in 1923 the Trans-Pacific tests were initiated.
An argument started as to how far the continuous wave signals actually did travel. And the old mathematical argument arose that you could go on dividing 1 by 2 to infinity and you never got to nothing. So from that, it was decided that the signal was never entirely faded out. It was only a matter of building a sensitive enough receiver and it would be possible to hear the signals from the American amateurs who were able to transmit while we were not. So that we concentrated on receivers, and largely owing to the enormous amount of organising work put in by H.K. Love, together with the heads at RRL in Hartford, that the transmitter tests were eventually arranged for May 1923.
Howard Kingsley Love, VK3BM, an early dynamic amateur, World War I fighter pilot, and the person behind Kingsley Radio, famous for the AR7 receivers and other radio equipment, also talks about the establishment of the Trans-Pacific tests. It's interesting to note that during 1946 the ABC made a radio program called The Hams. H.K. Love actually played himself, along with other amateurs, together with professional actors, in that particular radio play. The WIA has a copy of the script of the play, used by Howard, for the broadcast, which was made nationally and internationally via Radio Australia. Here now is Howard in a short extract from that program, recorded in 1946.
That we arrange a series of tests with the state starting the 1st of May and continuing, say, until the 30th. By working to pre-arrange schedules, we will at least know the signals are on the air. Well, I'd suggest 200 metres for a start. I know it won't be easy, but by May, atmospheric conditions will be reasonably good. And the Yanks are using high power, you know.
Another long-time amateur was Alan Butement, originally 6TM, of England, later VK3AD and the Chief Scientist for Australia. He was also a president of the RAOTC, Alan, known by most amateurs as Bill, was a young, keen amateur operator in 1924, when Frank Bell of Otago, New Zealand, and his friend Cecil Goyder, 2SX, had their famous two-way contact.
And it's interesting, just if I read you a few words from the article in QST of December 1924, which records this. The article is entitled, The Antipodes Linked by Amateur Radio. And the author says, "Get ready for a shock, gang. The laurels in this little old game of amateur radio no longer belong to America. We are barely in it. A whole string of new records have been hung up during the months of September and October. All amateur records were broken into smithereens on October the 19th when Z4AA, Frank Dylan Bell of Palmerston, New Zealand, was in communication with Mill Hill School, London, G2SZ, for 90 minutes. Now, the Mill Hill station was operated by C.W. Goyder, and I knew Goyder well because we were both at London University at the same time. So, when I read the banner headlines over the evening papers that night about this phenomenon, I phoned him up and asked him all about it, and he told me the score and invited me round to come and spend the night with him and then get going at 6 a.m. and contact New Zealand, which seemed all too easy when we did it, and then we went back to breakfast afterwards. So next morning, I operated a station called 6TM at that time, so next morning I got on the air and I promptly heard three New Zealanders, but none of them would answer me. And it took me about 3 days before I could make a gap in the clatter that was going on, all the amateurs in Britain trying to get through.
Max Howden returns again to relate the 1924 DX contacts. This was a recording made in about 1974.
I got down to something under 100 metres. But then I was sent over to Tasmania, over to Launceston, to endeavour to clean up the what was commonly called the Launceston Roar. In other words, making broadcast reception more or less impossible. It was bad enough for the ship stations to try and work it out. And I don't know why they gave me the credit for curing it, because I didn't cure it. Certainly I didn't put them on the track as to where it was coming from. And that was the DC power supply, 200 volts from the good old commutator equipped DC generators being fed into the wires, which was okay, except that the wires, if it was just being run along the post and that sort of thing to unload and so on, it was supported all the way along from other wires on the post, and that other wire, inductively coupled right round everywhere, was not earthed. And so I put them on the track of that, and apparently that was the end of the Launceston Roar. But while I was over there, the grapevine came through with a report that ZL4AA, our friend Bell, had worked G2OD and so on. Well, of course, I couldn't get back quick enough. I'd done the job to the best of my ability over there. I still had quite a lot of expense money left, but I came back and got on the air as quickly as I could. And the first station I really worked, it must have been something to do with sunspot cycle, because the first station I worked after I got back was Ivan O'Meara, ZL...
AC.
Alpha Charlie. 2AC. 2AC, was it?
Yes,
that's right. And he said, "Oh, you've got a terrific signal, Max. I'm quite certain you'd get through to the States. Can you come on the air tomorrow night," which was November the 2nd. It was Cup Eve, I know. And I'd been able to get away from work a bit earlier than usual because of the holiday next day. And I was to call Ivan at 7.30 our time. Well, I had an early tea and got on about 6:15. And I called Ivan on there. 6 AHP came back to me. And that was it. I didn't meet Ivan, thank him all the same. Now, then of course, similarly, as in the case with the G's, once the channel was sort of broken through, stations right, left and centre started working the W's.
To finish up this compilation, we return to Bill Buteman in 1967, where he relates a rather humorous story about international amateur communications.
But having got through to Dylan Bell, 4AA, the same New Zealander, I promptly discovered that his father and my father were old acquaintances. We used to live in Dunedin, New Zealand in the old days. And so I went downstairs and woke my father up about 6 a.m. and I said, look, there's your old pal Dylan Bell on the other end and he wants to have a chat with you. And my father took one look at me and he said, go back to bed, boy, you've had a bad nightmare. Well, after a minute I persuaded him that this really was true, and he came upstairs, it was an old rambling three-story house, with me and sat down, and I suppose for the next hour the two juniors conveyed messages between the two seniors, and the messages consisted almost entirely of what's happened to old so-and-so. Well, next morning Bell was calling me, and what had happened was his father, being a member of the New Zealand government, had told the Prime Minister, and the Prime Minister, realising that there had been an election in Britain the day before, was very anxious to get the election results. So as soon as Bell came on, he said, could I get the election results promptly? So I got the push bike out and I pedalled up to West Hampstead, and I got a copy of the Daily Mail just hot off the press, and I pedalled back quite exhausted. I typed my morsed out the election results, and they were a resounding Conservative victory. And about, oh I don't know, 2 months later, I got a letter from the New Zealand Prime Minister thanking me for pulling off one of the most interesting tricks he'd ever done in the House by announcing these results. He was a Conservative, of course, announcing these results to the consternation of the opposition 2 hours before the cable got the results through. And they never knew how it was done.
If you are interested in hearing more historical recordings, please let the callback team or the RAOTC committee know. This is Peter, VK3RV.
This is VK3OTN.
Our second talk this month lets you hear yet another voice, that of Will, VK6UU, who sent this talk on the development of the WIA broadcast. Certainly, it relates to VK6, but other states would have experienced a similar development.
Today we look at the history of VK6 WIA, which has been going for 87 years. The Daily News, Monday, March 23rd, 1931. The VK6 Whiskey India will go on the air on phone on Saturday evening, March 28th, using the 80-metre band. This will be a test transmission in preparation of the dissemination of Institute news to country members, technical lectures to members, and the testing of the set for phone and demonstration of principles involved for members preparing for their AOCP certificates. There will be a transmitters meeting held on Thursday next at the residence of Mr. Stan Owens in Mount Lawley.
A history of the VK6 WIA news broadcast after 1970. Up until the 1970s, the broadcast originated on the high frequency band, particularly 40 metres. As the news was primarily for VK6, and most amateurs lived in the southern part of VK6, 40 metres was an ideal band to provide good coverage to the intended area. Amplitude modulation was of course used up until the 1960s when FSB took over. The VK6 news then continued to originate on 40 metres, with some relays onto other bands. However, the 40 metre broadcast did continue for a number of years as it was considered important for shortwave listeners. My early memories of the 40 metre band was Harry Pyde, VK6HP, originating the transmission from Como. The broadcast was live, and Harry did a great broadcast for several years. It was during Harry's time as broadcast officer the news changed to being pre-recorded.
During the 1970s, the VK6 WIA news was rebroadcast onto the VK6 RAP 2 metres. This was primitive in the beginning, as the 40 metre SSB transmission was received and retransmitted onto VK6 RAP's input. There were a number of issues with this, particularly the timeouts on VK6RAP. The way around this was to interrupt the 2-meter transmission from the rebroadcast station every 4 minutes. Along with the poor SSB to FM repeat, the resulting quality was not good. However, at least the news was available to a growing number of 2-meter FM users, particularly amateurs who had 2-meter FM in their car. They could now receive the news while mobile and not need a bulky HF transceiver on board. But the timeout was a real annoyance, and Neil, VK6NE, came up with an electromechanical clock relay that could be used to inhibit VK6RAP's timeout. The relay contacts just shorted out the timing capacitor on the repeater's control board. The clock was powered from the mains but had a built-in spring backup, so mains failure did not change the clock's timing. The question was being asked more and more. Why not originate the VK6WIA news on 2 meters FM direct to VK6RAP, rather than relay from 40 meters SSB onto 2 meters FM and other bands? Why not reverse this and have a better all-round audio quality? There was considerable opposition in the early days even to relaying the news on the VK6RAP at all. Perhaps it was just a change too far. The news had been on 40 meters AM and then SSB for decades, and had served amateurs well.
After considerable debate, the decision to move the news originating transmission from 40 metres SSB to 2 metres FM was taken. A timeout problem had to be solved with a mechanical clock, and this was modified to remove the CW ident on VK6RAP, so relay stations did not retransmit VK6RAP's ident. All these changes back then had to be okayed by the ACMA. Any news relay on any band had to get the okay from the ACMA in writing. Amateurs who took on the broadcast position used their own 2-meter equipment to transmit the news to VK6RAP. As long as the clock did its job, there were no timeouts and the VK6WIA news had its biggest change in decades. Some rebroadcast stations took on the signal direct on 146.100MHz rather than receive VK6RAP's output. Provided the direct signal was noise-free, this was a good addition to reliability for the growing network of the VK6WIA news broadcasts. The move to using SM and VK6RAP resulted in many new relay stations springing up. We now had rebroadcasts at times on all HF bands and VHF bands of 6 metres, 2 metres and 70 cm. There's also a mention of the VK6WIA President's Report for 1986 to 1987, that the news also went out on 23 cm. I don't have any recollection of this. The mechanical clock worked, but it had a limitation. It could not do more than one time setting. The RD broadcast could not go out without a time problem on VK6RAP, along with a new proposal to rebroadcast the news Sunday evening.
CTCSS, Continuous Time-Coded Squelch System, was the obvious solution. If the news broadcast was encoded with a CTCSS transmission, then this could be used to remove the timeout and the CW ident on VK6RAP at any time. However, this required all broadcast equipment originating the news to have CTCSS. Remember, this was way back when many 2-meter radios did not have this option, and a CTCS encoder would have to be added, usually home-brewed. A CTCSS decoder was installed on VK6RAP, and amateurs who originated the news had to install a CTCSS encoder in their equipment to switch off the timeout and the Morse ident. This was before the present FM880 news transceivers were constructed by DOM VK6HK. The early days of this transmission were not without their problems, in particular remembering to turn on the CTCSS encoder. Several times the news timed out and the broadcast operator was unaware of the situation. This encouraged monitoring of another band that was taking the news from VK6RAP's output. However, even this had the odd problem, in that some relay stations who received a better signal direct from the broadcast transmitter, rather than the output of VK6RAP, continued to transmit the news even if VK6RAP had timed out, due to no CTCSS encoded tone. If the broadcast officer was monitoring this transmission, he did not know VK6RAP had timed out. Many frantic phone calls were made from time to time to alert the broadcast officer of the problem.
To help the broadcast officer know he had a CTCSS tone turned on, a pulse tone was placed on the carrier tail of VK6RAP that was heard all during the test transmission before the news. This overcame the problem of forgetting to turn on the CTCSS tone.
Once the basic news system had been established, the broadcast using VK6RAP 2 meters and the timeout and Morse ident inhibit, thoughts turned to using the CTCSS logic to link VK6RAP to the on-site UHF repeater, VK6RUF. This was done along with a transmitter installed to link the news down to VK6RMW at Mount William.
An interesting and confusing situation occurred with the evening broadcast. The news had been broadcast in the morning at the usual 9:30, but there was interest from some amateurs to have a rebroadcast on the Sunday evening. Remembering, this was way back in the early 80s when the fantastic array of digital options via the internet were not available. Not all amateurs could listen to the morning broadcast. The evening broadcast was done by a different broadcast officer. The problem was how to obtain a copy of the morning broadcast for rebroadcast in the evening. Sometimes the tape was physically transported from the morning broadcast officer to the evening broadcast officer. This was obviously time-consuming. So a simpler way was for the evening broadcast officer to record the morning broadcast from VK6RAP, or direct on VK6RAP's input frequency, and replay it again that evening.
One evening when Chris, VK6FC, was rebroadcasting the evening news, the various links, such as the UHF output on VK6RUF, and the link to VK6RMW at Mount William, turned on and off at regular interval of about 10 seconds. The news continued out on VK6RAP 2 meters, but the other links turned on and off. This was a real strange one. The CTCSS tone system was working as VK6RAP 2 meters remained on the air. Just the links dropped in and out at a precise regular interval. A look at the signal from Chris showed the CTCSS tone was slowly going up and down. It went low enough that the CTCSS decoder at Rollystone would drop out. And this would turn off the linked system. What was causing this? After much head-scratching, the answer was the mixing of the CTCSS tone that had managed to be recorded on the morning tape being transmitted along with the normal CTCSS tone on the broadcast transmitter. Yes, the recording system from the morning, particularly if it was recorded from the direct input frequency to VK6RAP, recorded the CTCSS on the tape and hence the rebroadcast. As the two CTCSS tones were not from the same source, they were on slightly different frequencies, and this resulted in the two tones adding and subtracting as the phase of the two tones changed. The fix was firstly to reduce the low frequency response of the recording system. This worked, and as a further fix, the CTCSS news tone was notched out within VK6RAP. What an interesting problem.
The VK6WIA news link system does a lot. However, it was designed and built with limited options, equipment-wise and money-wise, back in the 1980s. It's surprising the equipment at Rollystone has worked, largely without any major problems for so long. It is long past its use-by date and does need a rebuild along with improved design and more options.
This segment comes to you thanks to Will, Victor Kilo 6, Uniform, who maintains a website with history of amateur radio in Western Australia and far beyond.
It has been a long-standing practice of these broadcasts to finish off with something humorous. So, here is today's offering.
An atheist was spending a quiet day fishing in Scotland when suddenly his boat was attacked by the Loch Ness Monster. In one easy flip, the beast tossed him and his boat high into the air. Then it opened its mouth to swallow both. As the man flew head over heels, he yelled out, "Oh my God, help me!" Immediately this terrifying scenario was frozen in time, and as the atheist hung in mid-air, a booming voice came down from the clouds, "I thought you didn't believe in me." "Come on, God, give me a break," pleaded the man. "2 minutes ago I didn't believe in the Loch Ness Monster either."
Thank you for listening. This concludes our session for this month. We shall be back with you on Monday, the 6th of August, 2018. Until then, keep well and smiling. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying 73, and listening now for any check-ins and callbacks.